So going into a writing, producing, and directing a film that was based on a Christian type of theme wasn't really a challenge. It was what I want to do. And because it's what I want to do, and I hope it reaches individuals and helps to make a change that can help many generations as well as church leaders. And I think that's more important to bring people to Christ, as well as to make a difference. So I didn't really see it as like a big challenge.
Welcome back to another episode of Capture the Thoughts. Today, our guest is all the way from the United States, executive producer, director, and writer Tomiko Richardson, who has recently released her movie At the Cross. How are you, Tomiko?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. It's a
Thanks
pleasure.
for having me on the podcast. It's actually a really good start for everybody who's want to go through this kingdom walk, and I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It is an absolute pleasure having you here today. So you are currently promoting your film. Do you mind just giving us a brief about what it is about? No spoilers, of course, just a synopsis.
Well, okay, so the film is about a bishop that kind of that goes through his work as a pastor of a non-denominational church, which is centered in an urban community, and he faces a lot of uncomfortable situations that churches face today, including making sure that the youth are coming to the church and sustaining their place in church, also ensuring that the people who are already church members continue to come and are interested and are not turned off by the youth, and also trying to understand the dynamics of marginalized communities and how they feel in terms of God and church. And of course, building out a succession plan, where there may be some backlash for having females in ministry, as well as the need for him to retire because he has to be intergenerational, and the complexes of just giving it over to his son. So it meets a lot of different uncomfortable conversations, I like to say.
Yeah, it does. I watched the film myself and I found it very intriguing, actually. It was really good. And
Thank
so,
you.
yeah, so let us just, before we delve into the subject matters, let's learn a bit more about you. How did you come to Christ?
Oh, I was at, I'm actually the granddaughter of two preachers and pastors. So I guess that was kind of like coming to Christ was, I won't say very easy. It kind of started at birth. So in terms of having that dynamic, in terms of having the grandmother and the grandfather both be preachers and pastors at that time, that actually led the way to me understanding who Christ is in my life, as well as developing that religious background, the religious background and the spiritual connection to understanding, even through adversity, that you have to lean on Christ in order to move through life. And then also understanding that God is really not this genie out of a bottle kind of individual. He is an all-knowing, all omnipresent individual who focuses on not only the good, but making sure he corrects in love, and always understanding that there is always room for improvement, especially as you want to go to the kingdom. So, that was really my coming into the world with that kind of knowledge as a young person.
I love that. I love how you kind of grew up in an environment where the foundation was being laid for that. And I think it's something that we take for granted, the importance of raising up our kids in Christ. So that's really good.
Yeah, I think it's also important too, because if you look at churches nowadays, you'll see that there's a big gap in terms of where churches were with the younger generations years ago versus where they are now. There are a lot of unchurched individuals, so I think we need to work on that in terms of getting people back to God. But I think the problem is that the generation that has the kids right now, they're unchurched, so that brings about another generation of unchurched individuals. So,
So true. The gap just keeps on widening and widening.
yeah.
And so, how did you get into film production? I understand that you've been into business and into sports. So, how did you make this transition?
Yeah, so it wasn't really a transition in terms of that. So I still am an entrepreneur, still have my tech company, do that all the do that most of the time. Probably at least 60 hours a week. And with the film production, that was more of not only just an entrepreneurial effort, but also wanting to tell stories based on actual occurrences and events that I have been through and I've witnessed. So, didn't want to tell stories based on making them up and making them drama fed based on that. Trying to make inspirational stories to help others with whatever they may be going through in their life. And that's how it came about. So, I did study at New York Film Academy and studied writing many years ago. And my idea at that point was that I wanted to write sitcoms. And the person that actually was the professor of the course, I did one-on-one sessions with him. And he was very well known in terms of what he had done with comedies for Disney. And that whole thing kind of leveraged into, you know what, at the end of the day, I think I want to write, but I'll write specifically for not just a specific plot, but I'll write geared towards inspiration. So I think that that's where the difference was in terms of getting into what I do now, as an additional entrepreneurial effort.
That's so good. And it's interesting because your films can also be considered Christian movies. And there's this general perception that Christian movies don't really sell well or they're not very marketable. Was it an easy decision for you to kind of go along with that, or did it take a bit of deliberation and hesitation?
Not really, because I don't ever I've not been one ever to shy away from challenge, because everything I've done in my life has been challenging. In every field that I've ever entered in, I was predominantly the only female all the time, and I never saw that as a challenge. I just saw that as that's what I want to do. So going into writing, producing, and directing a film that was based on a Christian type of theme wasn't really a challenge. It was what I want to do. And because it's what I want to do, and I hope it reaches individuals and helps to make a change that can help many generations as well as church leaders. And I think that's more important, to bring people to Christ, as well as to make a difference. So I didn't really see it as like a big challenge.
That's so true.
The purpose was more important than the challenge, I'll say it like that.
I love that. I love that quote. That's a quotable. Because a lot of Christians are, they somehow wind up conforming to the world or conforming to a worldly standard just to fit in. And so it's so commendable when someone is bold enough to declare their faith through their work. And so, are there any challenges that you have faced in this space? Are there any challenges, and how, if there are, how have you been able to overcome them?
Well, I think well, the movie just came out right around the time frame of Easter. So, I think the number one challenge right now would be the dynamic of individuals who watch it and are more intrigued by the story versus by the message. So there are a lot of messages in there, and I think that depending on who the audience is in terms of watching it, they'll pick up on specific messages, or if they're just a movie buff, they'll just say they like the story. So I think that's the challenge there, is that you want the messages to come across and be very purposeful, and some individuals just like a movie. And I guess that's okay too, because it in some way reaches people that they've seen it. So I won't complain, but definitely I would say that that's a challenge.
And so now we're just zooming into this film a bit more and its subject matters. And it touches on many issues that are facing the church today. What is it about this topic that like kind of drew you in and made you decide that you're going to make a film out of it?
Well, I think in terms of churches today, especially in the US, depending on the denomination of the church, there is a need for succession planning. And you have to have a church that is built on an intergenerational foundation, such that the church is attracting individuals from different generations to come, to be able to be the successors of the church, as well as having the capability to reach the individuals who are in the middle of the church, like the 30s to 50s, and then of course the seniors that are part of the church that don't want to be pushed out of the church and shouldn't be pushed out of the church. So you have to have a way to reach all of them. And I think a lot of problems that I'll say here in the US that we are facing with some charismatic and non-denominational churches is that there's a need for, or the preacher or pastor or leader, I should say, feels the need to be relevant. And that need to be relevant comes off as confusing. Because if you're doing the same thing that the people are doing in the secular world, then how are you differing? So I think that that's a big issue that is currently there. And so succession planning and understanding that there needs to be boundaries between being relevant for popularity versus relevant for the kingdom, and that is very concerning. So I think that was one of the things that made me want to do this particular film. Another reason that I did the film was also bringing across the message of what the youth face it in today's society, a lot different than what we faced in growing up, because social media is a major influencer on what they do. They have to feel good, because that's what social media tells them they need to do. There's that thief of joy called comparison in social media, which can cause other pressures for youth, and that's not fair in terms of them just trying to be young kids growing up in society. So I wanted to address that in some way in the film as well. And then, of course, having female leaders in the church and making sure that they are groomed to be successors, as well as a groomed to be successful with getting the proper acknowledgement that they should get in the church. So those three things, I think, were the basis of it.
So you said something interesting on your first point. You said being relevant for popularity versus being relevant for the kingdom. I just want to dive deeper into that. What does that actually mean?
So, if you are a leader in a church and you are trying to gain more membership or gain more followers or viewers on social media, there are certain things that some of these leaders are doing, right? So, if you're going to play rap music that focuses on misogyny and violence, and you're going to play that inside of your church, and now all of a sudden you have that generation that listens to that type of music going, oh, that's cool because they play that in church. Then that's more for popularity because that's not saving souls, and that's not really, that's getting them to the church. But once you get them to the church, you have to understand that you have to identify a boundary for them to understand that that's not what you're promoting, but at the end of the day, you want to make sure that they are living a better life in terms of what they're listening to, their intake of their environment, and what they need to do in order to get to the kingdom, right? So you have to have that boundary there for the relevance and popularity, and make sure that it's for the right purpose. So, and I think that I think there's some struggles with that. And a lot of that also has to do with social media, right? So if you're not the most popular, quote unquote, pastor on social media, is that okay? Are you okay with that? Right? If you don't have a million followers or whatever, are you okay with that? If you're not the best pastor in this particular city or the most popular one in the city, are you okay with that? So I think there's a lot to, I think there's a lot for people to understand that when you're trying to attract different types of demographics, you don't want to show that you are in agreement with what they are doing. You want to show that you have love for them, regardless of what they're doing, and to help bring them to a state of doing better for themselves and doing better for the kingdom. So I think that that's where we're facing issues across the church.
These are very good points, and from what I'm inferring, it seems like the church is kind of losing focus. Its focus has been taken off from its mandate. And you mentioned social media as one of the reasons that this may be the case. What other reasons do you think that there are? Why are we not having churches that are gospel-centered?
I think we do still have churches that are gospel centered. I think they're just not as popular as the ones that are focused on quote unquote culture. So, this whole dynamic of culture and who's good for the culture, who's bad for the culture, and what people's done for the culture, and it's just crazy because that's just a new term for just a secular world and making people complacent in being in a secular world. Churches, a lot of churches have gone towards that model instead of understanding you have to stay focused on God's kingdom. And that, I think, is the issue that a lot of churches are facing, especially if they don't have the numbers and if they're seeking the popularity.
That is so true. And so, how do we counter this? How do we ensure that Or is it even for us to ensure? How do we make sure that our church, that most of our churches anyway, are focused on the gospel?
Well, I think it's up to the church leaders and the individuals that are
Mm-hmm.
the trustees in the church or on the boards of the church to take a stand and say we want to go back to biblical teaching, right? So you can't have the church be more of an entertainment center to attract people if the church is not going to focus on biblical teaching once they get them in the church, right? So if you can have more singing and dancing than the word, then what are we doing at this point, right? Are you incorporating the word into the singing and the dancing, or is the singing and the dancing just entertainment? So for an individual who's unchurched, singing and dancing might come across as great entertainment, so I'm going to go back to church, right? And if the but if the church see the singing and dancing as they're ministering the word, there's a different dynamic there. And singers especially, for most churches in America, they get paid to sing. So it's not like what it used to be where people would volunteer their voices for the Lord and sing for free, right? If you have a praise and worship team, most of those individuals are getting paid.
Wow.
So
That's interesting.
you have to be careful with that because it can turn into more of a gig lifestyle for them rather than they're ushering in the Holy Spirit and the Word. So a lot of times people don't understand that and they seem to think that it's just an entertainment, a way of entertaining. So, and you have some churches where, like, there's a couple of churches that I think the word is powerful that the preacher or the pastor preaches, but I don't ever attend those churches because they have a praise and worship service that lasts over an hour. So I don't go to church for a concert, right? So I go to church for the word. So I don't need all of the entertainment for that. But I mean, I'm different because I was rooted in biblical teaching and serving God. But at the end of the day, there are churches that do that. So there's that dynamic.
I see it can be a very thin line at times between, praising and worshiping God and focusing on yourself, and do I sound good? Do I look good? Is everything like, am I drawing glory to myself or am I drawing glory to God? So that's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that also is the fact that just going back to social media and individuals in the church and what they can do, there has to be a recognition that, and it has to be a valid recognition that for young people, you have to capture their minds and within a max 10 to 15 minute time frame, right? So if you're doing like a Bible study for young people, you have to keep it interesting for their attention span for that 10 to 15 minutes. Once you reach that 10 to 15 minutes, then you have to change into something else that's interesting. So you have to keep that, especially for the youth of today, because their minds are trained to turn off after a certain amount of time because of social media and how that's played into their life. And there's no fault of their own. It's just the dynamics of change within society. So church has to also be mindful of that as well. So I think that that's very important. And that's where the churches have to have intergenerational leaders because a leader who is 80 years old is not going to understand what the 15-year-old is going through, right? From that particular level. So you have to have individuals in the church that want to have a intergenerational impact across the board. And I think that that goes across helping the youth, helping those in that 20s time frame, helping those within the 30 to 50 time frame, helping those specifically in that area of they're in the sandwich generation where they have children, but they also have parents that they have to also keep an eye on and sometimes take care of. So there's a lot of dynamics in church that I think that leaders have to be aware of and be very cognizant of how to reach people where they are in that season. And that will help them for the long term for successions.
I like that. I think a lot of church leaders tend to take that for granted that, we have to reach people across generations. And so it's so easy for one group to be so to be forgotten or to not feel like they're getting that I wouldn't call it attention, but maybe recognition or, to not feel as if they're being seen rather. So I think it's a very important point that you have made. And
Yeah.
so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think and not to cut you off, I think a lot of that also has to do with where people understand that if you're using the Bible to correct people's, I'll say, misgivings and sins, but you're doing it with love, that reaches further than just judgment. And where the church always failed is that it has always judged individuals for their sins. So you can't have people in the church judging other people for their sins and basically casting them out and calling them out and things of that nature. Because if you do that, then that's a turn off for individuals who may want to come to church, right, and be in a body of believers and serve God, try to understand what their purpose is and things of that nature. So I think that the church also has to have leaders and people in place that call out when other leaders and other parishioners are doing that to make the church look like it's not a hospital, which it's supposed to be the hospital, right? So, and I think that people need to call leaders out on that when they're doing, and parishioners, I should say, when they're doing that and they're turning people away and being very off-putting of with that scenario. So that's yet another thing that the churches need to do.
That is so important. I mean, just holding each other accountable is so necessary. And you're doing it out of love, not because you want to show someone up or you want to make someone look bad, but you're doing it out of love for God and out of love for the people around you. So that is so key. And just to kind of, touch on that and maybe take a different direction a little bit. Is there a limit? Because you're talking about embracing people in spite of their sin, in spite of what they've been through. Is there a limit to how inclusive church should be? Is there a cap to say, okay, we stop embracing people at this point? Is there something like that in your own opinion?
In my opinion, I don't think that the church can stop embracing people because God never stopped embracing people. But again, this is my own opinion. But even though you embrace people, that doesn't mean that you accept their behavior. And I think that that's where you teach love first, and you teach God, you teach biblical teaching. But you l use love as that tool for correction instead of beating people over the head with biblical teaching, then basically casting them out with judgment and hate. So there's a difference. So it's not that you're saying that I love you, come to Christ, and come as you are, but understand all of us have sinned and fallen from the glory of God, right? So we all have changes that we need to make. And because we all have changes that we need to make, let's do it together, right? Let's hold, like you said, let's hold each other accountable. I only think that there has to be a boundary where you can't let sin prevail in the church, right? Because it's, if you allow everybody into the church, which you should, but then you're also allowing and not speaking out about the behavior and helping people to understand the way of the kingdom in terms of all sins. And I'm not saying that one sin is higher than the other in some type of in some type of hierarchical structure. However, you want to make sure that the sin doesn't prevail in the church and become influential for those who are new to the faith and have not been able to fully remove themselves from their old ways, right? So if you have if you have a lot of individuals that are in the church that are cheating on their spouses, right? Do you say, we don't want you in the church because you cheat on your spouse? No, we want you in the church because we want you to get it right, right? But what we don't want to do is have the pastor condone or other leaders in the church condone that type of behavior and hang out with the person who's cheating on the wife, cheating on, hanging out with their mistress. Like those types of things you have to have the boundaries of. And I think that that's where it has to be addressed, where you have to have a desire to help people, but not embarrass them. And that's where I think that the church should go in terms of that type of dynamic. Don't cast people out, bring them in, love them into correction. Just like you would want somebody to love you into correction. And I think that there's this horrible misnomer that right now is called, I don't know, I like to call it church light or God light, where people believe that if you're just good to people and you go to church on occasion and you just love people, that everything is good and God's pleased with you. And it's like, yeah, that's not even biblical, right? So what, and it's just like a parent, right? A parent doesn't stop loving their child because their child does wrong. A parent wants the best for their child, and a parent wants to correct them in their ways to make sure they do right in the future. And we have to treat that same relationship just like we have that relationship with God as our father.
That's good. That's really beautiful. I think it's so important because it's so easy to cast people out if they don't conform to your idea of what righteousness is. And so it's very important to remember that we are all sinners and we can't just be casting stones at each other. And so,
Absolutely. Once we learn that, I think honestly, if we all learn to embrace each other as we are today, love each other into correction, have healthy conversations, even though they may be uncomfortable, and embrace people that have different ideologies in terms of what they believe in, what their life has transcended into. But we have some type of empathetic approach to people, this world would be in a better place, right? We wouldn't even be in war in a lot of places, right? So we have to get to a place where we are able to embrace and love one another and understand that we can keep each other accountable and be in peace with one another while we do it, right? So I think that that's very important for the world in general.
That is so true. And just to touch on another subject that you seem quite passionate about, female leadership in the church, why is this something that really interests you?
Well, I think the dynamic right now, unfortunately, in the United States and our political landscape, there are evangelicals who are forcing this notion that women shouldn't be in the churches as pastors, leaders, or anything of that nature. And from that perspective, I think that it's very important for, and this is not even a movement, it's not feminist or womanist. It's just that at the end of the day, the norm of the individuals that go to church, the population sample, I should call it, of individuals that go to church are mostly female, right? So you can look at any congregation in church, and it's probably anywhere between 60 to 70% of female. Some churches as high as 80%. So my question would be, how do you relate to the women if you have only male leaders in the church? You can't, because they're not females. They can have wives, they can have daughters, all of that, but they will never know what it is to be a female. So certain topics, as well as being able to reach them, understanding what their needs are, what makes them tick in terms of what they're going through in maybe being a housewife, maybe just trying to juggle career and the house, marriage, children, etc. Those are things that men are not going to understand as wholesome as a female would. So there has to be a female in leadership that somewhere, or in ministry in the church, that will help to bring that dynamic around. And then we also have to understand that, of course, as nature, females have a very nurturing characteristic and attribute about them for the most part. Right. And that nurturing is very important when you're trying to bring people to Christ, when you're trying to help them get through adversity, when you're trying to promote or influence them that, hey, maybe it's not just biblical teaching you need, but maybe you also need therapy. Right. All of those things are basically coaxing individuals into being better and improving their lives for purpose as well as the kingdom. And that's very important that a female is a part of the leadership and or ministry in the church, because there are certain things that females can touch upon that men can't. So I don't think that that should be lost in what churches are doing in the future.
That is such an interesting perspective.
Example would be if you're going to the gym, right? As if you're going to the gym to lose weight or build muscle, tone, whatever your focus is, are you going to want to have a trainer that's not fit and not, I should say, not pleasing to the eye as it relates to looking fit, right? So you want someone that can relate to you as to where you're trying to go, right? And what you're trying to be, right? That's got to be your model. So, and then if you're a female and you want to basically have a female trainer that is gone down your journey or has a story like you have or fits in the dynamics of being a single mother or being married with multiple kids and trying to have a work balance, right? Those are the individuals that can reach you better because they understand what your dynamics are, right? Like your time constraints. So they'll understand how they need to fit that in and help you become better. So I think if you think of it not just from a church perspective, but just in a general, if you want to be better, you have to be around the individuals that can reach you and can relate to you, because either they've been on that journey before or they understand it and they understand what it takes in order to help you improve. And that's the same way with church, and that's the same way with life.
This is an interesting perspective, and I love how you said that women in leadership are able to relate better to other women, which is necessary. There seems to be this prevailing belief that a woman in leadership is unable to submit, especially in her home or to a man. They just, they're stubborn, they are, defiant, and then the opposite of gentle. That's the common belief. And so, what do you say to that?
I don't think that it's a problem for women in leader. Well, let me just say this. A type A personality with a type A personality in the home is probably not going to work. Right? So in terms of individuals that need to understand the importance of submission, a lot of it has to do with who you're submitting to, right? No one wants to submit to someone who, one, knows less than them, two, is not coachable, or three, is very demanding and authoritative and abusive in whatever capacity, verbal, physical, whatever. So in those three categories, no one is going to want to submit to you anyway. I don't care who it is. But if there is a common respect for one another, and there is the idea of coming together as a team, helping to elevate the other person. If there is servant leadership there would be no reason for anyone to not to want to submit. So that I think that there has to be that level of understanding there across that submission conversation.
And we see what we see as well is that a lot of women are afraid to step into those leadership positions. There's so many women out there who are gifted teachers, who are gifted, administrators who are gifted in certain aspects, but they themselves hold themselves back from stepping into that.
Yeah, and I don't know whether or not they're holding themselves back because they're afraid to submit, or if they fear that they're not going to be heard. Because there's that problem too. A lot of females believe that they aren't going to be heard if they have suggestions on certain ideas that would probably improve something within the church. And I think that that's a problem as well. But that's also up to the person's in charge in the church, whether it's the board or the deacon board or the pastor, pastoral council, whatever it is, they have to make it known that they want to he hear from other people, not that it's going to be some type of authoritative situation.
That is so true. And so I see a lot of what we're speaking about goes back to church leadership and their level of submission to God and His Word as well. I'm realizing that that's what we have been actually discussing, or that is what has been linked to what we've been discussing this whole time.
Yeah, well, it all starts at the top, as they say. So whatever bad choices and I should say bad behaviors that start, they start at the top and they usually trickle down. And if they don't trickle down to other people doing the exact same thing that's accepted at the top, then what happens is that there is a level of all types of chaos that's confused and confusion that's created because of what started at the top.
That is so true. That is so true. So we are reaching the end of this episode. Do you have any last words of encouragement that you want to say? Anything that you'd like to close with?
Just for individuals to understand that as Christians, we want to make sure that we are not holding people hostage for any type of behaviors or sins that they've committed in the past, right? We need to make people, we need to make each other accountable to do better across the board, and do that with love, love, not judgment. We also need to make sure that we understand that culture is not biblical. The kingdom is big biblical, and that our purpose should reach far beyond what we do today, but it should reach generations to come. And I think that that would those would be my leaving thoughts.
Thank you so much for sharing. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. This has been really good.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on the podcast.
Sure. And so we have reached the end of this episode. Until next time, stay safe. Goodbye.